Hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the Tuts Experience Podcast, episode number 58. I hope you're well, guys. Welcome back to this personal journal podcast from yours truly, me, Kieran Tutiot, aka Kiwi Tuts for all my wrestling fans and listeners, of course. And yes, run-of-the-mill Kieran. Yes, hello. I hope you're all well. Thank you for joining me, guys, for this week. Yes, episode 58. Today is Bank Holiday Monday, the 29th of August, 2016. And there isn't hardly a cloud in the sky here in my office. Well, outside my office. Thankfully, there's no clouds in here. But I can see a plane going across. I've got a couple of clouds going across the sky. And it looks beautiful. Yeah, I just saw a plane go over the house. And I'm going to have a quick look and see what one it is. Yes, speak to yourselves, guys. But no, it's a Ryanair flight. Come from Carcassonne in the south of France. Yeah, and it's going to Manchester. And it's currently flying at 38,000 feet. And certainly it looks like it. Well, guys, I hope you're well. Thank you for downloading and listening to the show. Follow us on Twitter at Tuts Experience. And like our Facebook page as well, if you wouldn't mind. It would be great. Facebook.com/Tuts Experience. And, I just hope you are all fine and dandy and enjoying the summer. Certainly here in the UK, the weather in the summer this year has been fantastic. So warm indeed. It's 25 degrees and it's a quarter to five now in the afternoon. But it's been so warm all week and for the last few weeks. And I thought it was starting to get a bit colder and cooler and a bit more breezy, but it's certainly not, sadly. There's not hardly a wind in this, you know, about at all. I'm looking across to a huge big tree. It's just on the other side of the road from me, but at the bottom of the field. Because I've got houses in front of me. I've got terraced houses in front of me. Small, like, cottage type of terrace houses. And then I've got farmer's fields going back for about 2 miles in front of me. And I've got this huge tree also there. And it's hardly moving. There's nothing. So it's static heat almost, ladies and gentlemen. Can you imagine? Yes. Just it reminds me of my time when I went to Orlando about this time in 2013. I was absolutely stiflingly hot there. Oh my gosh. And it was really funny in Orlando because it just threw down with rain all of a sudden. between 4 and 5 in the afternoon. It was very odd. And it almost seemed to be every single day. Very odd. Very odd. But quite refreshing, particularly when you're at a theme park and you're going around the park all day, or tucking into some, you know, was it butter beer? Yeah, that's ultra sweet. Yes, but very nice. But yeah. So, obviously, guys, this podcast is all about my life, really. I get to talk to you about my life and indulge in things like that. Also, we'll have a look at my huge hobbies of the Eurovision Song Contest and professional wrestling. And also we have a look at the various things in the news and go from there. And one thing I want to talk to about in particular in this podcast is about airplane travel. And only just before I started doing this recording, I was watching a very short documentary, which we will be hearing a little bit later on, about Concorde. Now, I'm not in the slightest bit interested in watching planes or, you know, being a plane enthusiast, or air enthusiast, whatever, you know, any type of enthusiast like that. My thing is European Eurovision music, of course, and professional wrestling. But after my experiences with Ryanair last weekend, it's made me think about things, if you know what I mean. And but I'll be honest, I've flown quite often, you know, in comparative to many people I know who haven't even left the country, which is quite shocking. My first ever flight I took was a smallish plane with Flybe, a regional airline here in the UK, from Southampton to Dublin, the capital of Ireland, and that was my first ever flight I ever took. It was an interesting experience, but on the flight back, my ears did not pop, and I had the worst headache ever. It was so bad. So it made me quite nervous about taking the flight to Sweden, to and from the UK, to Sweden from the UK, with Ryanair at that time. Oh, gosh. But we'll get into all of those stories a little bit later on. But I really want to share them with you, and I want to hear your experiences of flying. Are they positive? Are they negative? Do you worry about it? Do you get nervous about the fact that you're like 38,000 feet in the sky, just like that Ryanair flight I was talking to you about just now? And, you know, really you're at God's mercy of the captain. But then if you're in a car, you've got much more control. And you have control of your own destiny rather than two people sat at the front of the plane. So, yeah, I want to hear your stories about that type of stuff, guys. All the positives, mostly. But we'll get into all of them a little bit later on. I've got some fantastic music for you, too, in this episode. And we're going to be sticking around for probably the next, for about an hour or so. So don't worry, I'll be here to entertain you as only I can here on The Tuts Experience.
Yes, yes, I know you're hungry. Ah, and here comes dinner.
Feed my Frankenstein.
Well, I need you.
I bet you didn't expect me to play that song. I love that. That's Alice Cooper, Feed My Frankenstein. Oh, do you know, that would be perfect for some weird, gothy type of freak type of professional wrestler, don't you think? Walking down to the ring, having that, Feed My Frankenstein. Oh, it'd be amazing. And Alice Cooper, wasn't he a WWE fan of some sort? Didn't he feature in some type of WrestleMania? Was it WrestleMania 1? Jimmy Snooker? Or did I imagine that? I'm sure somebody will come and tweet me and tell me about it, if you don't mind. Yes. At Tuts Experience, guys. Yeah, all one word. Or at Kiwi Tuts. KIWITUTS. Let me know. It'd be good to hear from you. Right, well, today's sort of topic is about airplane travel. And I've put up BuzzFeed.com, a good source of facts. And they do like to get you on there and sort of like looking at various things, you know. Indeed. So we've got 10 mind-blowing facts about modern-day flight, which I want to share with you. And I think it's a subject which at least you won't find here on the Trending Topics Network very often, or let alone on my own Tuts Network podcast feed. But it's just something different. That's what I think. And, you know, we get lots of professional wrestling talk here on the Trending Topics Network, but we've got to spice things up a little bit, not only with my own Eurovision showcase, but we'll carry on. Right, yes. So, 10 mind-blowing facts about modern-day flight. Now, number one. There are almost 10 million commercial flights a year in the United States alone. Yes, crazy. And that figure has come from the US Bureau of Transportation. All right, number two, commercial planes are faster than ever. Yes, Boeing 777 hyphen... Oh, there's a bit of a burp. Excuse me, I am drinking... I say Edmund's refreshing golden beer at the moment from Green King. It was brewed in Bury St. Edmunds. I've driven through there in a coach before. And it's not bad, actually. I don't particularly choose beer, but I think somebody left it over here. I put it in the fridge a week ago and I've left it. So anyway, I'm having it now. So anyway, we go back to number two. Commercial planes are faster than ever. So the Boeing 777-200LR... won't forget that in a hurry, will you? Can travel 10,793 miles at a maximum speed of 560 miles per hour at a cruise altitude of 35,000 feet. Pretty impressive, eh? Oh, but unmanned experimental hypersonic planes can go much faster. Yes, the X-438 scramjet can now reach a speed of more than 700,000 miles per hour, 9 times faster than the speed of sound. Now, I think that's mostly because of, the US military planes, mostly, I'm sure, or maybe even the Russian ones, I don't know. It doesn't really say here. Modern jet engines would turn the Titanic into a speedboat. Could you imagine? number five, these complicated controls, you know, that you would see in the front in a plane's cockpit, can literally fly themselves. Yes, today even smaller planes come equipped with digital electronic autopilot combined with a flight director. That's pretty awesome. Now, even the bathrooms are high tech. Some planes, like the 787 Boeing Dreamliner, even have hands-free sinks. They do. They do. Didn't I go on one back from Stockholm not long ago? I don't think that was a Dreamliner. I think it was an Airbus, that one. So it was a French plane. Yeah. Now, some commercial planes are so big that they can hold 500-plus passengers. Yes, the Airbus A380 seats 525 people, and it has an upstairs. Oh, I know. I really want to go on one of them, to be fair. Number 8. The annual US usage of jet fuel is more than 20 billion gallons. Yes, that's a whole lot of jet fuel. And the produce, to produce the same amount of energy of 22 pounds of aviation fuel, you need a ton of batteries. Number 9. Electric planes are a reality, but could be the future. Although still in fancy, they exist. And the perpetual Taurus G4 can travel 200 miles in less than 2 hours on the electricity equivalent of less than a 1 gallon of fuel per passenger. And finally, number 10, most impressively, commercial space flight is almost a reality, and you can pay to go to space. That is very true. Shocking, isn't it, really? So, to be honest, it's quite fascinating, you know, where you could go on a plane, you know, anywhere in the world, at your local airport, practically. I mean, it's quite you're connected practically to the world around you quite easily. Just for example, I'm going to take into consideration my local airport, which is Southampton Airport. Now, Southampton's not very known for its tourism, other than the fact that it's a huge cruise port, and there is a large amount of people that come to Southampton to catch on the cruise ships that go around either the Baltic Sea, by going to Denmark, to Sweden, to Russia, to Finland, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Germany. They all go around that way. Also, you could catch a ship that goes up into the Norwegian fjords, or across to Iceland, or even go on a Mediterranean cruise, or even go to Amsterdam and to Ghent or Antwerp in Belgium, and then come back, or even you just go down to France and Spain and come back, you know, or even across the Atlantic with Cunard. But, I mean, this is fantastic. Southampton Airport, which is literally 20 minutes on the car down the M27, which is our main freeway, motorway from me. Because the airport handled nearly 1.8 million passengers during 2015, and 2.34 compared to 2014, making it the 18th busiest airport in the United Kingdom. But still, that's saying something. Southampton Airport has a CAA public use aerodrome license, which allows flights for the transport of passengers or for flying instruction. The airport is owned and operates by AGS Airports, which also owns and operates Aberdeen and Glasgow airports. It is previously owned and operated by Heathrow's Airport Holdings, formerly known as BAA. Yes, indeed. So, current destinations that you have here is Aer Lingus Regional, they operated by Stobart Air, flies to Cork. You also have flights to Alderney. Also, Austrian Airlines have a seasonal charter service to Innsbruck. That's interesting to me. BMI Regional fly to Munich. Eastern Airways fly to Aberdeen and Leeds Bradford. Everlope Airlines is a seasonal charter plane that goes to Palma de Mallorca. Now, Flybe are the biggest operator there in Southampton. They fly to all sorts of places, including Alicante, Amsterdam, Belfast, Bergerac, Dublin, Dusseldorf, Edinburgh, Glasgow, Jersey, La Rochelle, Limoges, Lyon, Malaga, Manchester, Milan, Munich, Nantes, Newcastle, Paris, Charles de Gaulle, Paris, Orly, or Rennes. They also have seasonal flights to Avignon, Bastia, Biarritz, Bordeaux, Brest, Chambly, Faro, Geneva, Grenoble, Palma de Mallorca, Perpignan, Salzburg, Toulon, and Verona. Blue Islands Airlines fly to Guernsey and Jersey, which are part of the Channel Islands off the coast of France. Or Germania have seasonal flights to Chambly. KLM have flights with their City Hopper service to Amsterdam. That's all the way through the year. Thomson Airways have seasonal flights to Ibiza and Palma there. Aviota also have seasonal flights to Palma too. So that's Envelope Airlines, Thomson Airlines, and Aviota Airlines that have seasonal flights all to Palma. Interesting. But as I said earlier, flight numbers have been increasing quite a fair amount. In the year that I went to Dublin, the amount of passengers had increased the most. And it's slightly gone down a little bit over 2010, 2012, and then it started to creep up and then dipped a little bit this year, as we said earlier. But the most popular flight and busiest routes from Southampton are to Edinburgh and Glasgow. Interesting. And, yeah, pretty interesting stuff. So, yeah, there we go. So, anyway, as we're talking about Concorde, we are going to talk about Concorde today, and as I was saying about earlier, about this incredible feat of engineering that was created in the 60s and 70s, and sadly came to an end in 2003. And I was watching a video earlier by the YouTube channel called VOX Fox. Okay. And they had a really fascinating gentleman on the show who's been contributing to the video that I'm going to play for you in just a few moments, from a gentleman called Bob van der Linden. So he must have some Dutch roots or so. He's the creator of air transportation in the National Air and Space Museum in the United States of America. So, if you're fascinated about Concorde, which I am, and I never was until this afternoon, check this out.
We had it. From January 21st, 1976 to October 24th, 2003, we had a commercial supersonic passenger plane called Concorde. Today, it takes 7 hours to fly from New York to London. On the Concorde, it took about 3 hours and 30 minutes, just under 3 hours if it was record time. A journey that would have taken the Titanic 137 hours had become just barely long enough to watch Titanic while crossing the Atlantic. The Concorde came to represent class, style, and the miracle of engineering. Here's a normal plane landing, and here's the Concorde landing. Which one are you looking at? With Concorde, we all looked up and pointed, and then in 2003, it stopped. We had commercial supersonic flight and just let it go. Why? Why did the Concorde become a museum exhibit? This is the Smithsonian's Concorde, and the curator who got it flew on it, too.
I did see, you know, the color of the sky at 60,000 feet. It's this most gorgeous, deep, deep purple.
How did a breakthrough become a piece of memorabilia? The answer says something about how innovation really sticks, and it's complicated.
I've got a personal interest in the SST, and I'd like to tell you about it.
SST equals supersonic transport, any transportation that's faster than the speed of sound. It became a dream after Chuck Yeager broke the sound barrier in 1947, and a technological race in the 1950s and 1960s combined Cold War competition with a classic mid-century faith in engineering. Americans, Russians, and the British and French governments dumped hundreds of millions of dollars into supersonic R&D. Think rooms full of engineers in short sleeves and ties. The then Seattle-based Boeing won the American design contract in 1967. That's where a certain basketball team got its original name.
Supersonic, win the game!
But development stopped after a 1971 funding cut. Russia's effort, the Tupolev Tu-144, flew, but it was grounded after an extraordinarily spotty record over just 55 flights. But there was a winner.
Concorde, the paper dart jetliner conceived jointly by Britain and France to shrink the world and cut air journey times in half.
From the beginning, Concorde was a marvel of design. It wasn't designed with computers, but through math and trial and error. They had to innovate constantly to make a supersonic passenger plane possible.
The airplane needed to be very long and narrow to go supersonically comfortably.
And the paint was twice as reflective as other jets, just to compensate for the heat from air friction.
Because you're traveling at Mach 2, twice the speed of sound, even though you're at 60,000 feet, the airframe would actually heat up dramatically. So I actually, touched the window. It wasn't warm, it was hot.
Fuel flowed around the plane during flight to adjust its center of gravity for takeoff, cruising, and landing.
So these pumps are working the whole flight, but you can't tell.
But it was the beautiful wing that distinguished the Concorde for its greatest fans.
It's a delta wing, but it's called an ogival delta wing because of its unique shape.
Delta because it was triangular, like the Greek delta. Ogival to reference its curve. The delta wing helped the Concorde get lift at takeoff and limit drag while in flight. The rest of the plane compensated.
The one compromise in it, it required the aircraft to have a very high angle of attack on takeoff and landing.
Since pilots couldn't see out of the plane because of angled landing, engineers put together a solution.
The Concorde featured a droop snoot.
Droop snoot?
Yeah, the snoot would droop.
The snoot drooped.
The reason being that it was a delta wing design and it had a very high angle of attack on landing. So in order to see, they were able to lower the nose.
It flew at Mach 2, more than 1,300 miles an hour, faster than the Earth spins.
You couldn't tell. The only way you knew you're doing Mach 2 was that they had a Mach meter up on the bulkhead. And everybody was focused on that because it would creep up. And as soon as it went Mach 1, everybody would break out into applause.
To minimize drag, it soared so high you could see the Earth's curve. The Concorde defined the glamour of high-speed flight.
Now, this is a very important part of the seven-piece wardrobe, this washable dress that she wears in hot climates.
And it had the admiration of celebrities like Sting.
It's always exciting flying supersonic, and it's always exciting to get to New York before you've left.
It was a stratospheric cocktail party.
Normally people complain about how bad the airline food is. I will attest, in this case, that was not true. This was one of the best meals I ever had. It worked beautifully. A normal French meal takes 2.5-3 hours. Well, by the time dinner was over, we were here.
So, what went wrong? On July 25th, 2000, the Concorde punctured a tire during takeoff for Air France Flight 4590. 113 people died. Though failure happened shortly after takeoff, it was due to a problem specific to Concorde tires. The plane was grounded until November of 2001. By that time, the September 11th attacks had already depressed the industry. But while both tragedies did affect Concorde, there are only a couple of pieces of the fundamental challenges for the plane. Noise levels on takeoff were high, but massive supersonic booms had no comparison. In the 60s, the Air Force ran a test of sonic booms over Oklahoma City, and residents reported hundreds of damaged windows and noise disturbances. All that meant limiting supersonic flight to above the ocean. There would be no New York to LA Concorde. That's part of what quashed the American supersonic experiment with Boeing, and it limited demand for supersonic planes from the beginning. Noise concerns were paired with environmental concerns.
There will be severe environmental damage to the ozone layer.
The plane's high flight pattern made scientists think its exhaust gas could be more threatening to the ozone than normal jets.
What was noticeable was that you kept climbing and climbing and climbing. We're flying much higher than a normal airliner.
A massive fleet of supersonic planes probably would have caused real damage, setting red flags for a supersonic future. Fuel requirements also limited range to transatlantic journeys without any trans-Pacific cash cows. It guzzled enough fuel that price fluctuations could hit particularly hard. With ticket prices as high as $12,000 a seat, that was a significant risk, and tickets had to be expensive since, at most, only 120 passengers could fit on the plane. It couldn't distribute the price tag. That was compounded by the need for specially qualified crew members and maintenance that came at a premium. And it was all for a very demanding crowd.
Air France and British Airways had to position a spare Concorde in New York in case the flight back had problems. So there's an airplane sitting on the ground, not making any money, just in case. Because Concorde passengers expect, you know, to walk onto a Concorde because they paid a lot of money to it.
None of these factors stopped the Concorde, but they all boxed it in until it had nowhere to go but down. When Air France and British Airways announced the Concorde's closing on April 10th, 2003, it wasn't about the past, but the future. The manufacturer, Airbus, decided supporting the Concorde was impossible. An aging Concorde, it still had analog controls and a flight engineer, both of which newer planes had lost, would cost too much to upgrade or redo. In a way, Concorde's economics were similar to this toy model's economics. I got it for $10 because the manufacturer could distribute the cost of factory workers, tooling, and distribution over thousands of cute planes. Airbus loves doing the same with its family of jets. Even if a flight were profitable for an airline, the airline couldn't afford a new small batch of airplanes. All the factors that boxed in Concorde kept its scale so small, it would be wildly unprofitable to service, rebuild, or revive. The best option was to land for good. We like to think breakthroughs only end because of disaster, with a crash. But they can fall short without disaster, despite a breathtaking wing or a jaw-dropping droop snoot. They have to come with a business model and supply system, a political resolve, and a plan to expand. Even as future dreams for supersonic transport simmer, all those business model questions remain unanswered.
They don't exist unless they make money. Some people don't like that idea, but it's a fact of life. They're there to make money. And if they're making a product that doesn't make them money, they'll either stop making it or they'll go out of business, or both. You never know.
So the flight time to London can return to a double feature slog. But we lose something with the drudgery. Progress slows, and we have to wait for something else to look up at. Something worth pointing at.
So I have fallen completely in love with the Concorde, but it was not that comfortable of a ride. Bob told me that while the legroom was pretty good, the headroom was not, and neither was the seat width. It was kind of like a coach seat. And you can see that in this video of Sting. He looks pretty cramped. Especially for Sting.
And he did look cramped, actually. Yes. Poor Sting. Well, he can't fly supersonic anymore. Can he? Oh, diddums. But anyways, I mean, in all realness, I bet most of you are thinking, like, well, what's the point, you know, spending all of this money when really you only have to sit on a plane for, you know, another 3.5 hours to get there? Because it is now about 7 hours, as they said earlier, to get from New York to London. It doesn't really matter, whatever way it happens. But, you know, it's quite sad that they made all of this effort, you know, back in the 70s and the 60s to build the supersonic stuff. But if it can't make money, then exactly what is the point? Right, we're going to have some more music now. And we'll be back in just a few moments. I hope you enjoy this particular tune. And I no doubt you're probably all expecting this one anyway. Yes, you just heard Sarah Aalto there with No Fear from Finland's Eurovision National Final 2016. Yes, well, Sarah Aalto was on this last weekend's episode of The X Factor here in the United Kingdom. Yes, and she got through to boot camp. Ooh, so there we are. There's our Eurovision reference for this week. You may have not known, but if you watch The X Factor, which I don't think a large majority of you guys do, then now you know why and where she comes from. Yes, indeed. So, anyways, we were going to talk about a bit airplane stuff now, because, well, just in my experiences, because I haven't had any terrible experiences at all, but my partner Rob, he's not terrified of them, but just he would prefer not to go on them. So, so when we flew to Lourdes last weekend for a long weekend, we had a lovely time. But we had a lot of turbulence for the first half an hour, which is a bit of a shame. So poor Rob made him a bit more dubious about the whole experience of going through it. So, yeah, so that didn't work out well. And then once we arrived back at Stansted, we came into land. And the guys at Ryanair, the pilots just threw on the anchors, basically. And pulled us all forward, basically. Which is a bit annoying. But, you know, they can do what they want, practically, can't they, these guys? But, yeah, so what, really? Doesn't really matter, to be honest. But I said to Rob, I said, we don't worry about that. But he's quite happy to still fly now. But we'll go with British Airways because he feels a bit more safer with them than Ryanair. Even though, really, there's no real difference. Okay. Right. Anyways, we're going to have some Eurovision news just to keep you updated with the latest things going on. Now, this is quite sad. RTCG, the national broadcaster in Montenegro, has confirmed this afternoon that they will not be participating in the Junior Eurovision Song Contest 2016. Montenegro has become the third country to withdraw from this year's Eurovision contest in Valletta, Malta. Montenegro debuted in the Eurovision Song Contest 2 years ago when the contest was last in Malta, and they're represented by Masa Vujicic and Leja Vulic with the song Brudi de Brudi Neja na Jani Dan, which finished 14th in the final, scoring a total of 24 points. The country again participated in the Junior Eurovision Song Contest last year in Sofia, Bulgaria. RTCG once again opted in for a internal selection, picking Jana Morkovic with the song Ululia. In the final, she finished in 13th place, scoring a total of 36 points, with 8 points coming from both Serbia and Macedonia. Montenegro has not given reasons why it's decided to withdraw from the contest. However, it's likely due to issues of securing funding to compete in the contest. Montenegro joins San Marino and Slovenia in withdrawing from this year's contest, which will be held on November the 20th. To date, 14 countries have confirmed their participation in the Junior Eurovision Song Contest 2016, with both Poland and Cyprus returning to the contest. Australia and Serbia are the only two countries who competed last year, but yet to make a public announcement on their participation. Yes, well, so let's hear last year's Montenegro Eurovision song. Junior Eurovision song from Jana Mrkovic, and this is All You Are. I enjoy this one. But remember, guys, if you don't worry, it's only 3 minutes. Oluja se negdje začuje, moje srce sreću sačuje. Tamo gdje sam ja, oluja sa neba, stiže sad u snove tvoje. Sam ja, ko grom are. Montenegro's Junior Eurovision Song for the 2015 Junior Eurovision Song Contest. Oh, yes. Well, now this is something different. After a year's absence, we have the Eurovision Young Musicians Contest taking place. Yes, 2016. Now, 11 young musicians from right across Europe have arrived in Cologne for the Eurovision Young Musicians 2016 this Saturday. Last night, the welcoming party was in Cologne City Hall and was attended by all 11 competing young musicians. Also presented were the host broadcaster WDR and the executive supervisor of the Eurovision Young Musicians Contest, Jon Ola Sand. Eurovision Young Musicians 2016 marks the first event in which Jon Ola Sand will be the executive supervisor of the contest, other than just the Eurovision Song Contest. Today's rehearsals have begun, for the final on Saturday night. The young musicians, who will be performing one piece each, will be hoping to impress judges and take home the title. The pieces the young musicians will perform have not been fully revealed. However, it is known that Elliot Narkovist from Sweden will be performing an excerpt of St. Helens Piano Concerto No. 2, and it has been revealed that he will be performing fifth in the final. So, we have the following competing countries and their participants. We have Austria, who won the last contest in 2014. They're represented this year by Dominik Wagner, who will be on double bass. Croatia's Marko Matavinic will be on the tamburka. I hope I pronounced that right. I've never seen that before or heard of it before. Well, I haven't Googled it, so maybe I would if I had a look. Anyways, Czech Republic will be represented by Robert Billy, who will be on piano. Germany will be represented by Raul Maria Di Gianola on the horn. Yes, the horn. Hungary will be represented by Jacob Roland Attila, who will be on violin. Malta will be represented by Dimitri Kijanov, who will be on piano. Norway will be represented by Ludwig Gum, who will be on violin. Poland will be represented by Lukasz Dyksko, who will be on saxophone. San Marino will be represented by Francesco Stefanelli, who will be on the cello. Slovenia, Zlala Vidic will be on the cello. And finally, as we mentioned earlier, Sweden will be represented by Elliot Narkovist with the piano. For more information about this year's contest and news about the selection process, then head over to Eurovoir.com and head over to their Eurovision Young Musicians Contest. Now, the winner of the 2014 Eurovision Young Musicians Contest was from a young chap playing the violin, and his name is Xingyu He. So let's hear that piece of music there. The winner of the Eurovision Young Dancers Contest 2014 from Austria. Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. The young chap there, what was his name? Zhiyu He from Austria, originally from China, the winner of the Young Musicians Song Contest. Young Musicians Contest, it's not a song contest, but yeah, you get the drift. It's just mind-blowingly awkward. Right. Oh, dearie me. What are things like? What am I like? Most important thing. Let's have a quick look over the news currently at the moment. The US says fighting between Turkey, pro-Kurdish, Turkish rebels and Kurdish alliances forces in northern Syria is unacceptable. We must stop. Yes. There's lots of clashes between the Turkish and the Kurdish people at the moment. So, yes, that's still raging on, sadly. A man is arrested on suspicion of perverting the course of justice following the reported abduction of a child in Redhill, Surrey. Yes, I did hear about that. That was quite bad. Police officers should be allowed to have tattoos on their hands, neck, or even their faces, says Police Federation of England and Wales. Oh, dear. Now, here's an interesting thing. Migrants in Calais seeking asylum in the United Kingdom should be allowed to lodge their claim in France, says the President of the Region of Calais, as they told the BBC. Xavier Bertrand said people living in the camp known as the jungle should be allowed to apply at a hot spot in France rather than waiting to reach Britain. UK officials currently check passports in France, stopping many from entering. The Home Office says those in need of protection should seek asylum in the first safe country they enter, which is true. In European Union law, they refugees, if they want to move to another European country, they must seek asylum in the first country they enter because of how many countries there are around, of course. The jungle camp has become a focal point in France's refugee crisis, with up to 9,000 people living there. Almost every night, many try to circumvent passport checks and hiding inside vehicles entering the port and the Channel Tunnel to get to Britain. Mr. Bertrand hopes that amending the current agreement between France and the United Kingdom, called the Treaty of Le Touquet, would help alleviate those problems. The treaty allows Britain immigration officials to check passports in Calais and their French counterparts to do the equivalent in Dover. Without it, the UK's officials would have to wait until people and vehicles arrived on British soil. Mr. Bertrand said under his plans, anyone rejected the UK would be deported directly to their country of origin. But the Home Office spokesman said that the UK government was committed to working together to protect the shared border in Calais and to maintain the current controls. Yes, the French government have reportedly made it clear that removing the juxtaposed controls would not be in the interest of France. The Home Secretary Amber Rudd is to meet her French counterpart, Bernard Cazeneuve, in Paris on Tuesday to discuss security issues. The debate over the border control is a key issue in the EU referendum campaign, with David Cameron claiming that the jungle would only move to England if the UK left the EU. Oh, yes. But weeks after the warning, and then PM, the French President François Hollande agreed to a mutual commitment to keep it in place after the Brexit vote. Theresa May and Mr. Hollande reiterated the commitment. Under EU rules known as the Dublin Regulation, asylum seekers should claim asylum in the first state they come to. So British officials must take responsibility to claim for claims made elsewhere in the EU if the person can demonstrate that they have close family members living legally in the United Kingdom. So all that's going on. It's obviously a complete mess from every stretch of the imagination and every word and meaning. So, ooh, awkward. Now, in the United States, Hillary Clinton's personal aide, Hummer Abedin, has announced that she is separating from her wife, disgraced former politician Anthony Weiner. Oh, Weiner, oh dear. Ms. Abedin announcement comes after a report emerging that he allegedly exchanged sexual photos with a woman. He appeared to have sent a photo of himself in his underpants with his toddler son nearby. Oh dear indeed. Okay. Well, a brighter bee who wanted a no-fuss and low-key hen party had to be rescued by the RNLI after their hire boat ran aground in a river. Four women were celebrating in the River Dart in Devon on Saturday when the vessel became stuck in the mud as the tide went out. The RNLI spokesperson said that the party were travelling to Dartmouth when they got into difficulty. The spokesman said the group were cold, but otherwise not hurt. Oh dear, they're all smiles there in the photo that is up on the BBC News website. bbc.co.uk/news. So, oh dear. Well, Queen Victoria has beaten Mrs. Slocum into the TV ratings crown as ITV's new regal drama drew more viewers than BBC One's revival of the classic sitcom Are You Being Served on Sunday. Overnight figures showed that the average of 5.4 million people watched Jenna Coleman in Victoria, excluding plus ones. Are You Being Served, in which Sherry Lawson donned Mrs. Slocum's pink wig, was seen by 5 million viewers, but it was followed by an updated Porridge, which attracted 4.4 million viewers. So, out of the both of them, the Are You Being Served one, that one, but 0.4 more million viewers for Jenna Coleman on as Queen Victoria on that BBC new regal drama. And who remembers the classic parts of Are You Being Served? Oh, gotta share some of them with you now.
Good morning, Mrs. Slocum. Miss Brahms.
Captain Peacock.
1 minute late.
You're lucky to have me at all, Captain Peacock. I had to thaw my pussy out before I came. You've been out all night.
That is the last time. When you said he was a TT rider, I thought you meant he didn't drink.
Going to cost me a fortune at Madame Beryl's to get this knot back into shape.
Well, at least you're here on time, Mrs. Slocum.
Time for what? There won't be any customers, you know, and what it's doing to my domestic arrangements. Having a bath at 6 o'clock in the morning played havoc with my pussy. I mean, he sleeps in the airing cupboard, and the gurgling of the tank woke him up.
Mrs. Slocum, Mr. Rumbold would like to know why you're late.
Well, the central heating broke down. I had to light the oven and hold my pussy in front of it.
Slocum.
Well, if I'm to spend an evening in this club, there'll have to be accommodation for my pussy. Mr. Humphreys, leave my pussy alone. Well, if I'm not home on the stroke of six, my pussy goes mad. It's very short notice. There's my pussy to consider.
I beg your pardon.
Who's going to let it out?
So rude, isn't it? But they've reincarnated Are You Being Served? Because sadly, except for Mr. Rumbold, I believe, all of them have passed away already. So, and I was really impressed, actually. I was laughing practically all the way through it. So let's have a small clip from the brand new BBC version of Are You Being Served from Grace Brothers Department Store in 1988.
Who's Jimmy Connors?
Who's Jimmy Connors? Only the greatest tennis player that ever breathed.
I don't like tennis. I like Jim Kerr. Do you know Simple Minds?
No, but I work with a few.
So do you fancy him then, back in the day? This Jimmy Connor?
Connors? Not half. Centre Court, Wimbledon, 1977. I thought all my birthdays had come at once when I caught one of his balls.
Oh, excuse me. Anyways, so that's all good fun, isn't it? Yeah, so must check that out. BBC iPlayer, or I'm sure all of them are on YouTube by now. Oh, we'll see. Right, anyways, so we're going to go into our next piece of music, guys, and then we're going to say our goodbyes. I don't want to try and go over an hour or so, because I know you've all got busy lives to lead. Indeed you do. So, yes, we're going to have a final piece of music for this week's edition of the Tuts Experience.
I heard you want to be somebody, but you're already shining on me. She tried to make you feel so lonely, but you can be my one and only love. My love, my love. You can be my love, my love, my love. You've got the dreams to go on. Take a step and look towards the sun. It doesn't matter where you've come from. Here is where you'll always be the one. My love, my love. You are not alone, 'cause I found a place where you by the beauty in front of me. So if you wanna know how I feel like you were meant to be my love. My love, my love. You I love. feel your heart beat through me. Feel like we were meant to be, my love, my love, my love. You can be my love, my love, my love.
Share my love here on the Tuts Experience. Oh, well, we're coming to the end of the show, guys. Just to briefly go through things. Well, work's going very well, going through the busiest time of the year, service change time. So I'm going to spend most of next weekend changing bus timetables. Oh, it's going to be crazy. I just hope to God that it doesn't rain. If it does, I should not be a very happy bunny. No. And I've got no waterproofs either. Though, well, I do have a big high-vis jacket with a hood. So I could wear that and just wear some jogging bottoms or something underneath them. It's an idea. It's always ideas. So yeah, it won't be. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. But I'm gonna having longer days, no doubt. Other than that, yes, I'm really happy. Myself and Rob are really good. We're now under a year now until we get married. Oh dear. So we crossed the mark last weekend. You know, into a year. So yes, very, very exciting about that. We were having a debate if we should get cars to transport us to the venue or not. But I might go for something else. We'll have to wait and see and have a look. Other than that, all is grand with me, guys and gals. So I just hope you are well too, alright? And look after yourselves, for goodness sake. Yes. I mean, I know in my last episode I sounded really down and depressed about the whole Brexit type of stuff now, but to be honest with you, since the Olympics and Britain coming second, I feel more proud in my country. And the real fact at the end of the day is that there was only a million and a half votes between the two of staying in the European Union and not. So, and it's going to take years for us to break away, so we shall see what happens anyway. And play it by ear. But as you guys know, it's always been a lifelong dream for myself and Rob to immigrate to France or to Ireland, really. So but we do love our country, and we do love all of our family and friends around it too. So that's all that matters. But I know I haven't really touched on pro wrestling this week, guys, and I've done that purposely because there's plenty of pro wrestling stuff on here, guys. I mean, for goodness sake, the European Uppercut, which I'm a part of here on the Trending Topics Network, with myself and Ian, of course, the living legend Kai, and PK, and Adam Pearson, of course. You've got to check out Adam's brand new show called Horizon. It was on BBC Two last Tuesday. It's still on the iPlayer for the next... Was it Tuesday? Was it Wednesday? Could even be Thursday. I cannot remember. That's terrible, isn't it? But it's still on the iPlayer. And no doubt you'll be able to watch it somewhere if you're outside of the United Kingdom. So speak to Adam. I'm sure he'll be able to sort you out there. Or get a VPN. That's an idea. So yeah, go and listen out. Sadly, I couldn't be on last episode, but Ant the Vigilante was on there too. So do check out Ant's Return. Also, you've also got the Spanish announce table with T-Mac and Captain Awesome. Awesome as they both are. And also the Wrestlecast guys with Mr. Old School, Heavy Set, Andy, Biohazard. And there's somebody who I've completely forgotten off my mind. Obviously, Katie the First Lady. Yes. And I think that's it. I think. Could be completely wrong. But there's lots of wrestling talk out there, guys. Especially on our channel. So make sure you download and listen along. They'll keep you entertained. Alright. So that's it from me. Kieran Tuttiot. Kiwi Tuts. I'll see you next time. Hopefully it won't be another 2 months until I do another podcast. But if someone comes up, you never know. You never know. Short and sweet is always good to eat. So follow us on Twitter at Tuts Experience, or one word, TUTTS Experience, okay? Also, you can email us, tutsexperience@hotmail.com and also like our Facebook page, The Tuts Experience. So I hope you look after yourselves, take care, and I'll see you next time. Arrivederci, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, and have a nice day. And as always, I will leave you with something, a lovely cracker, a Christmas cracker at the end of this show to leave you guys for. So yes, Christmas isn't far away, guys. It's less than 4 months ago. Speak to you later. Toodaloo. Now, if you are still listening, welcome to the bonus bit of the Tuts Experience. And this episode, we are having a look at a fantastic segment from I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue, the legendary BBC Radio 4 comedy, which was hosted by Humphrey Middleton at the time. And there was a hilarious piece, which I want to show you now, from a segment called The Quiz of Quizzes. If you know your quizzes and quiz shows on TV, you know exactly what's going on here. Enjoy this, and I'll see you soon.
We come now to what's known in modern broadcasting parlance as a landmark event. So welcome to our spectacular, brand new round, The Quiz of Quizzes. Right, fingers on buzzers, teams. How many legs have donkeys? Hang on, somebody at the door. Samantha, can you go and see to it? Okay. Right, carry on. Tim.
Four.
Tim says four. Barry and Graham?
Higher.
No.
Higher.
No,
are you sure?
Higher.
I don't think it's lower.
Lower.
You say lower. Well, lower. The right answer is that no legs have donkeys. So you were right to go lower. And Tim gets 10 points. Tim. Tim, question or nominate?
Nominate Graham.
No, the right answer is nominate Barry. You lose 10 points. Barry, what's the first letter of the word aardvark? Is it A, B, C, or D?
Oh, can I go 50-50, Hum?
All right. Computer, take away one wrong answer and one right answer. Barry, you have two wrong answers left. Which do you go for?
Can I phone a friend?
All right, if you must. Who are you calling?
Ian.
Hello?
Ian, this is Humphrey Littleton from Radio 2's Best of Jazz. Now, I know you can't... I know you can't see the show.
Yes, I can.
Why? Where are you?
I'm here. I'm in the audience.
Well, you were told to switch off your mobiles before the recording. Please switch yours off now.
Oh, sorry.
Barry.
Ian... Ian, what's the first... Ian? Hello, he's gone.
Aardvark, does it start with C or D? Take your... Take your time.
I'll ask the audience.
All right, go on then. No. Switch them all off. Barry, you're out of time. But let's see what our survey said. Jeremy, your turn.
Can I have one off the top row and five little ones, please?
Okay. There you are. That's one Dundee cake and five macaroons. And your target is... toad in the hole. Well?
No, I've only got toad in the blender.
Well, three away, but that's only 2 points. Graham, your turn, and it's time for what happens next.
Okay.
Well?
Well, what?
What happens next?
I don't know. I've never played this before.
Have a guess.
Well, what's supposed to happen next?
The what happens next round.
Well, what happens in that?
I'm asking you.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've never heard this before. I mean, I come here in all good faith. I don't know what's supposed to happen. I'm not sure what's been going on so far anyway. I've no idea. I did.
And Graham was talking when the whistle went. So you lose 10 points. Well, teams, at the end of that round, you've banked a miserable 72p out of a possible £10,000. Who is letting you down? It's time to vote for who you think is the weakest link.
Anne Robinson.
Anne Robinson.
Anne Robinson.
I'd have to say Anne Robinson as well.
Tim, why Anne Robinson?
Exactly.
Well, Anne Robinson, you are the weakest link. Goodbye.